You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up, it's been a busy week in Wisconsin news. We'll recap the top stories with Rob Menser from the USA Today Network, Wisconsin.
First, it's Food Friday, and this week we explore the flavors in a volatile region of the world where travel visas for Americans can sometimes be hard to get. The new cookbook, Taste of Persia, is a culinary pilgrimage of sorts.
Author Naomi Duguid crisscrossed five countries, Armenia, Azerbaijan, Georgia, Iran, and Kurdistan. She uncovered age-old recipes and techniques for bread making, stews, and kebabs.
Naomi's new book is Taste of Persia. Naomi, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, happy to be here.
Well, before we get to the food and the recipes, can you tell us a little about the journey? What did you set out to do, and how did you try to track down these recipes?
Well, you know, it's many journeys, because you can imagine it's a little bit interesting leaving. It takes energy and focus, you know, any time you go on a trip when you don't know what you're doing. I mean, when you're going to find things out and going. So I made a trip to Georgia, then came back and another time made a trip. So it's been over the last 3 years I've made trips to and from the region. And what I do is I go and kind of hang out. I go without any contacts particularly, and I have an idea of where maybe the cities or towns I want to go to, and then I try and stay in homestays and hang out in markets and tea shops and just try and see what daily life is like, because I'm really interested in home cooking and kind of local food habits and, you know, what grows there, what do people do with it. I eat at little restaurants. It's really fun. It can be tiring, but that's not a complaint. That's just the way it is. But it's so interesting.
What do you think you gain by looking at it? It sounds like as much a cultural experience as a culinary experience.
Well, you know, really, if you think about food, it is such a strong expression of culture, right? So really, I don't think you can look at food apart from culture, because it is such a piece of it. And if you're trying to understand another place, I mean, I always think I take the easy route. You know, other people go and, I don't know, they study the music, you know, ethnomusicologists, or they look at other things. But food, we think about food every day. We have it, we think about it. We don't have it, we think about it. But, you know, we're participating in food and food culture every day. So that's my entry point to anywhere I am. I mean, even in my home base in Toronto, which is a fairly complicated, wonderfully complicated food landscape. You know, I'm learning things every day if I'm out in the market and looking at what people are shopping for and, you know, who's shopping for what, and going to restaurants large and small. And, you know, it's what turns my crank. I'm just really curious about how things work for other people. And this is a wonderful lens to look at the world through.
So, Naomi, with this idea of a taste of Persia, you're covering a lot of geographical area, multiple cultures here. Are there flavors, ingredients, and styles that kind of transcend, that go to all of these different areas?
Well, you know, that's a good question. When I came up with the idea, I wanted to talk about the sort of Persian culinary legacy and what I think of it as a Persian culinary region. So if you think about, you know, the Persian Empire was extended at various times over the last 2,000 years more, over large areas all the way sort of from Greece to India. And so the areas, the countries now, but the areas closest to Persia, Iran, were the ones that had the longest sort of effect and longest contact. And so what I want to do is, you know, we talk about a Mediterranean culinary region. You know, we think about the foods of Italy being, well, they're like, they relate to the foods of Spain or Greece, but they're distinctively their own, and then there's regional cuisines within that. So in this culinary region, what you have is flatbreads kind of everywhere, different kinds of flatbreads, so it's sort of like a geography of flatbreads, and then you have different languages and religions, of course, and different individual histories of the countries. But apart from the flatbreads, you have fresh herbs in, you know, on the table and used in cooking, which is just a wonderful thing. People use tart fruits, you know, like sour pomegranate, and there's sour cherries and so on, and they use those with savory dishes. So you can use pomegranate molasses as an ingredient, like in a marinade, or It's just a lovely use of not just lemon for souring or lime, but other tart fruits, and that's something that, you know, it's a familiar thing, but it's flavors that we know already in a European or North American tradition, but used a bit differently. Oh, and there's also nuts. People use a lot of walnuts, and then in southern Iran, pistachios. That's another sort of fun ingredient to play with in new ways.
What you wrote about saffron was really interesting. The labor that goes into getting the saffron from the saffron crocus, which I also didn't know about. Can you tell us?
It's completely shocking.
Yeah.
It's sort of, you think, seriously? Why did anybody start to do this? You know, what compels us, you know, to go to all that effort for? I mean, there's certain things, not just saffron, but there's some things where you think, how did human beings ever, you know, embark on this process? So saffron, yeah, the crocus, if you think about flowers, have stamens and stigmas. They're called stigmas, and I'm not a botanist, so I don't know why. Don't know the difference between the stamen and the stigma. But anyway, the sticking up things in the middle of the flower, you know. And they're a dark, gorgeous color, a kind of a dark orange-red, red-orange color. And there's three in each flower. So you have these little tender crocus blooms, and these are crocuses that bloom in the autumn in late September, well, October, really, in Iran, in northeastern Iran, sort of near Mashhad and near the Afghan border. And people cultivate them, so they plant the bulbs, and then they water them in the fall, and they water them a second time, and these crocus, and there's just sort of this bare dirt. And then these crocus flowers come up early in the morning, and some come up later in the day, perhaps, and people pick the flowers one by one, and then they get taken in big bags to, say, a large, I imagine it as a large table. I'd love to see that part of the process. I've only seen them in the field, in the village. And then it's usually women pick the three stigmas out of each flower. And so that's what saffron is those little, so they're often called saffron threads because they're as small as sort of a piece of coarse thread.
We're talking to Naomi Duguid, author of Taste of Persia, a cookbook exploring the cuisine of the Persian region. I want to get into some cooking now. You've got recipes for biryanis. We've got one of them, by the way, spinach biryani on the Central Time Facebook page. What is a biryani, first of all?
Well, a biryani is a really lovely category of dish, and that's actually a Persian dish as opposed to being, although you find them in Azerbaijan and Armenia sometimes by another name, but it's a cooked vegetable. So the spinach biryani is cooked spinach, and then it's still a bright green, and then it's mixed with thick yogurt. So you can drain the yogurt to make it thicker, or you can buy thick, like Greek yogurt. And they're stirred together, and then there's fried onions stirred in, and a little bit of maybe some chopped walnut sprinkled on top. And if you're being fancy, to go back to saffron, you can put a little saffron water. So what you do is you take a saffron thread or two or three and put it in warm water for 5 minutes. It stains the water and flavors it this lovely yellow color, and then you pour a little drizzle of that on top.
And this can be more than a spinach. You can make a biryani of all kinds of things, right?
That's right. And I love, actually, I taught a cooking class last week in the Hudson Valley, and we made a beet biryani. And so if you cook the beets ahead, you know, you can cook them in the oven or boil them, whichever, and peel them and chop them. When you mix them with yogurt, of course, it's then this gorgeous pink color. And then I like, instead of putting walnuts, I like putting pistachios on top, because then you have that brilliant green of the pistachios. Yeah, you can really do it with any dish. You can do it with eggplant.
Let's check out another dish now. I'll go to Azerbaijan, and you've got a fish dish. This is a fish kebab from Baku, the capital city. And this is one also we have on the Central Time Facebook page. Tell us about these kebabs.
Well, those kebabs, there's rather a beautiful picture of them in the book. I'm really happy with the studio shots. I took the location shots in the book, which sort of show people in daily life. But the studio shots were shot in New York by some photographers called Gentle and Hires. What you do with the fish is you just take fish fillets, and then you skewer them. And you can skewer them sort of once through, but I find with the fish fillets they're sometimes floppy, so I sort of thread them onto a skewer. And then they have lemon juice and dill on them ahead of time and salt. It's sort of a brief marinade. And then you grill them, simple as could be. And then you serve them with sliced red onion. You can serve them with a little side sauce. I suggest a pomegranate coriander sauce that in the book, but you could serve them with anything. It's got a little acidity and a little freshness and maybe some green herbs. It's a very, very simple way to cook fish. And for people who are nervous about cooking fish or for people who don't like eating it because of bones, if you're feeding them fillets, the bones are, there's no bones, right? So it's kind of a happy way to get people started on fish.
We're talking with Naomi Duguid right now about her new cookbook. It's called Taste of Persia. In her extensive travels, she tracked down traditional recipes from five countries, Armenia, Azerbaijan, Georgia, Iran, and Kurdistan.
You could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you made or eaten dishes from this region? Is this part of your family heritage? Do you have questions about the spices, the cooking style she's writing about? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page where you can find some of the recipes we're talking about.
And we'll pick up our conversation in just a bit here on Central Time.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. And right now we're picking up the conversation with Naomi Duguid, talking about her new cookbook, Taste of Persia.
We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Have you traveled in the Persian region? If so, what dishes stand out in your mind? Or maybe you'd like to know more about one of the cuisines, the styles of cooking that we're talking about. Naomi can help answer your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can find some recipes and post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll take a caller now. We've got Mary Sue joining us in West Bend. Mary Sue, hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. This is very timely. Here in West Bend, we have the University of Wisconsin-Washington County, and every fall they have a lecture series focusing on a different country, and the country of focus this year is Iran. And I'm on the lecture planning committee, and also I help out with the cooking for the first lecture. We always follow the first lecture with items from the country of focus. So we had a lot of Persian things to eat, and we anyone who attends the lecture is able to partake. So it's very interesting. We prepared sour cherry saffron rice with chicken, and we had a yogurt dish, and we had a flatbread and some cookies from a Persian recipe. And, a few other items, but it was quite a feast.
It sounds delicious. And Mary Sue, before I let you go, what was the most delicious thing that you ate?
Oh, gosh, hard to say because it was all very tasty. There was something called kuku, made with fava beans and some spices, and that was very interesting. I also learned so much about cooking in the region because they really make things differently and use different spices than other countries, and a lot of people don't realize that Iran is not an Arab country. They speak Farsi there, and they just do things differently. So, and a lot of life in Iran is focused around food, which I'm sure your guest can attest to.
Mary Sue, thank you so much for that. And she talked about a lot of delicious sounding food there, including
isn't that fun to hear
rice
that?
Dishes. Yeah, what struck you about that?
Well, it's interesting because what have we talked about? We've talked about mentioned sour fruit, and there she said sour cherries in the rice, so sour fruit in savory dishes, and it's just and the yogurt dish, right, and a sweet, because there's a wonderful repertoire of sweets in Iran and in the whole region, actually, just fabulous, often flavored with a little bit of hint of rose water, say, and maybe some nuts. It's interesting that she points out this is terribly important for people to know that Iran and the Persian tradition is, it's not, to speak in the negative, it's not Arab, it's not Turkic, it's Persian. And there's a whole other repertoire. The spices or the flavorings aren't hard to get hold of, but they're just not what you'd expect. It's not, olive oil and thyme. It's mint and dried mint. And you can use olive oil instead, but traditionally there they use sunflower oil, actually.
Mary Sue, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Naomi, one thing I'm curious about, I don't know really anything about Kurdish food in particular, and you spent time in the Kurdish autonomous region in Iraq. What kind of things stand out about Kurdish cooking to you?
Well, you know, I didn't know anything about Kurdish food either, really, except a little bit about some of the flatbreads. And it was a revelation, actually, to me. Like everywhere else in the region, the other ingredient is in people's food lives is hospitality, sort of generous hospitality. So I ended up in the bosom of a family, basically, and being very taken care of. And it was the rice tradition that was so new to me, because their rice, instead of being the long sort of basmati-style rice that you get in Persian tradition and in Azerbaijan, it's a sort of shorter grain, more like a rice, an arborio, a rice from the Mediterranean, and it's cooked in flavored liquid. So it's just quite different. It is more like risotto as you eat it, richly flavored, and just a complete surprise to me. Very accessible, actually, and very delicious. So that's something that's become part of my kind of regular repertoire, is Persian rice flavored with walnuts and pomegranate molasses.
And you shared with us a recipe for Kurdish white beans. Can you describe that one and what goes into it?
Well, it's like all the beans, you're basically cooking them in a little oil. It's flavored with turmeric and a little cumin. But the thing that's interesting with this, it's a shlay, a stew in Kurdish terms, is they don't use onions in their shlays. And I don't know what that's about. You know, normally when you and I think about a stew, the first thing you're going to do is maybe heat some oil and put some onion in there, right, to provide a flavor base for the dish. But in Kurdistan, no, you heat the oil, turmeric, cumin, cooked white beans, or you can cook them ahead or use canned ones. And then there's just some tomatoes to flavor it. Very, very simple. And then dried lime. And dried lime is something that you can find. You can get it mail order. You can find it in Arab or Persian grocery stores, Turkish grocery stores. And it adds this lovely little sort of tart note. So it's a really simple dish. And I wanted to say about bean dishes generally, there's a lot of dishes in the region that are have no meat in them. And I'm always running into people who have a vegan or a vegetarian in their family and are thinking, oh, my gosh, what can I make as a main dish? You know, I've got this person coming to dinner, what to do? And I sometimes get these phone calls from friends. And there's a whole lot in the Persian culinary region that you can make without meat and without sort of distorting it or without feeling like you're depriving your guests. And this is one of those dishes.
Talking to Naomi Duguid, author of Taste of Persia. It's a cookbook that covers Armenia, Azerbaijan, Georgia, Iran, and Kurdistan. We'll go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Marlene is on the line in Madison. Marlene, hi.
Hello.
Hi, what did you want to tell us about?
Oh, just that one of our favorite foods is fesenjoon, and then the tadik. And then the tadik, the bottom of the rice dish, when you cook it and it gets that crispy bottom.
Hmm. Okay, fesenjoon, Naomi, what is that?
Well, fesenjoon is a dish of duck, or now more often chicken, and it's cooked in a sauce. You've heard me mention it already, this flavor combination of pomegranate molasses and walnuts. And they cook together with some water, and they make this intense flavored sort of tart sweet sauce, and then you cook the chicken or duck in it. And it's a real classic. It's a northern Iranian classic, very delicious. It's and then the tadik that she mentioned, this is the crust of the rice. And you know, if you're cooking rice, you might think, oh my gosh, a crust! I failed with my rice. You know, there's a crust at the bottom of the pot. What did I do wrong? But in Persian tradition, and in Azerbaijan as well, the tadik, the crust, is really prized, and people specifically flavor some of the rice at the bottom of the pot to create this crust. And so it's really, so when you turn the rice out of the pot onto a platter, then you lift the crust out of the bottom of the pot and put pieces of it all around. And that's the favorite part of the dish that people reach for first.
And you mentioned pomegranates, and there was, I love pomegranates, but I find them kind of laborious to eat, and they kind of have that juice all over the seeds and the mess, but they're delicious.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And you have a way of eating them. It seems pretty genius that you learned. Can you tell us about that?
Well, it's pretty fun. Yeah, it's really fun. I was with some nomads in southern Iran, and I watched this guy. I thought, what is he doing? Because he had a pomegranate, and it was a beautiful, ripe, heavy, full pomegranate. They're very tight in their skins when they're ripe and perfect. And he was pushing on it all over with his fingers and thumbs, and gradually it got squishier looking. He wasn't breaking it. It was just, so it eventually was like a basketball, a deflated basketball, saggy looking. And then, so this is what you do, I learned. And then he made a hole in it with the end of his pen, actually, and put it straight onto his mouth. And I realized, and then he just squeezed it with his hand. And when he was pressing all over, he was breaking the little seeds inside. So then when he put the hole in it, all that juice was in there waiting for his thirsty mouth, right? So I started to do that when I was in Iran. And in a bus, I could eat a pomegranate without getting it all over myself, by breaking it first and then making this hole and then sucking the juice dry. And then when you break it open, there's a few seeds that still haven't been broken, but, you haven't made a mess. You can even wear a white shirt, basically. And, instead of making yourself look like you've been in a bloodbath, right? And it's just such a treat. But you have to start with a lovely, ripe one. It was just one of those little things that, who knew? And then there I was, and I found out. And so it was fun to write that description. I thought, is my editor going to say, do we really need this in here? But actually, she said, oh, I like this, which was, I was happy about that.
Well, we'll leave it at that great pomegranate advice. Naomi, thank you so much for being with us today.
Lovely talking to you.
We've been talking to Naomi Duguid. She's the author of the new cookbook, Taste of Persia, A Cook's Travels Through Armenia, Azerbaijan, Georgia, Iran, and Kurdistan. You can find some of her recipes. These all sound really good over at the Central Time Facebook page. We'll also want you to take video of you doing this pomegranate trick and eating it successfully. I'll still steer clear of the white shirt while I do that.